and welcome to the broadcast with Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
And welcome to the show, everyone. This is episode number 64, season 2, episode 19. And this week, we actually have a bit of a special bottle episode for you guys, if you will, because you know how much we love the bottle. But... as we are recording this, it is Tuesday, November 7th, 2017, which makes it Election Day 2017.
We made it. The world is still here.
The world is still here.
For now.
As we speak, our president is taunting Kim Jong-un from a podium in Asia somewhere. So
practically spitting distance from the border, I'm sure.
So I'm super hopeful that we make it to this episode being released. But
if not, it'll have been real fun, I'm sure.
Yeah, super fun. So we thought that this episode would focus more on revisiting our Raw episode from last year, which was our reaction to the presidential election, which took us all kind of by surprise. We want to talk about, in a civil way, of course, we want to talk about, though, how we feel a year later, what our thoughts are about now, about the future. We just kind of wanted to touch base and see where we are a year later. And then in the second half of the show, we have a special interview with two wonderful women who put together a documentary about sexual assault. One of them was assaulted when she was in college. And I will leave that part for that because I don't want to give away what's coming up. So it's a bit of a heavier episode. But I made an alcohol joke in the first 30 seconds. So
it can't be all that heavy.
It can't be all that bad. But anyway, we hope that you enjoy this. So hello, ladies. Happy Election Day 2017.
Happy Election Day 2017. It was a very different day, wasn't it?
It was a very different day. I think I make this joke an hour from now. Spoiler alert. But I'm significantly more sober than I was at this point last year.
I wonder why.
No, but in all seriousness, this is the first year, first Election Day since I turned 18 that I wasn't eligible to vote.
Well, it's not that you right. Okay, I was gonna say it's not that you weren't eligible. You just didn't have any open races in your district.
In my district, yes. So I live in Raleigh, North Carolina, but my neighborhood, just my little the city of Raleigh lines are like really weird, and my neighborhood is not in the city of Raleigh, which is awesome at tax time because I don't pay city of Raleigh taxes, but not so awesome when. You know, you want to vote and you can't vote.
Right. So there was just like nothing for you to vote for.
There was nothing. The only real race in Raleigh, it was just all municipal elections in the surrounding towns, like board of elections and mayor races. But we just had a race for the mayor of Raleigh and that was it. And well, we couldn't vote, which kind of led to a bit of an identity crisis when I realized this. I was like, if I can't vote for mayor, then does that mean technically when I'm in my home, I don't have a direct leader. I just answer to the governor. Which do I call the city of Raleigh Police Department if I need, if somebody comes to rob my house? Like, what do I had this whole like, and I'm sure it was.
Well, if you dial 911, who answers the phone?
Yeah.
You should probably just check. You should just call just to check.
Is it just vigilante justice in my neighborhood? Yeah.
Militia?
Yeah.
Well, it is the South.
Exactly. So, I mean, I do hear that I have this right to a militia, but neither here nor there. But serious, I had all this small, like, identity crisis. Because I spent yesterday a bit down. And then to find out that I couldn't vote, I was like, I can't even make a difference as the world is burning.
Well, I have something that'll cheer you up.
Please do.
On the subway home today, I noticed there was a woman wearing a pussy hat.
Ooh.
And it made me smile. And then a creeper stalker took a picture of her.
Fabulous.
I was like, on the fly. My eyes deceive me. So yeah, that kind of brightened my mood. But like, yeah, I voted first thing this morning, got up, went to my polling place. It was not very crowded because, you know, stereotypically, well, not stereotypically, proven factually, people don't turn out as fervently as they do for national elections. So that's kind of a bummer. But the short line was really nice. I was in and out in like 5 minutes.
That's what she said.
That yeah. Sounds like a long yeah. I got to work earlier than I normally do.
Nice.
So that was good.
Nice. Yeah. I didn't have anything to vote for either. So.
Yeah. Meh.
Yeah. And the New York City I voted sticker is pretty rad this year.
It's the 100th anniversary women's thing, right?
No, this is just a New York City one. I've seen those. The one with like Susan B. Anthony with like a little like speaker.
Yeah, because 100
what's
years
thing called?
Women got the vote, the right to vote in New York, right?
Yeah, we were talking about it in therapy today and I was like, I don't know. That sounds like it could be right. But yeah, the New York City I voted sticker is new and it's really cool. That's yeah, it's like a subway map and it's got all the boroughs on it. My particular version has all sorts of hair on it and sweater fuzz. So I'm just going to put it back on the side of my desk here.
Super cool. I like that.
Yeah. I was like, ooh, this is a nice one.
I should have gone to my polling place and been like, do you have any stickers that say I wanted to vote?
We just get a, I voted and then just put the little like sign and like wanted to.
That's totally something
I would
do. I should have just gotten a name tag sticker because we have them all over my office and just been like, I wanted to vote today. I would have if I could have.
Yeah.
No ballot, no problems.
Yeah. I got 99 problems, but a ballot ain't one.
Yeah. Oh, well, shall we get into it?
Yeah, we're already laughing a lot more than we did last year.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So a couple of days ago, I re-listened to the episode and I made myself cry.
Out of pride, out of...
Like I was moved by myself. Because I cried in the episode and then I was listening back to it and I cried again. And then I was like, holy shit, I need to like maybe, I don't know, work on my narcissism. But like, it was really interesting to hear what we had to say, I think. And it was also, I think, the episode in which I swore the most out of any episode. I think it was also my angriest episode. You guys tried to be very positive. I was not. And I feel like, I mean, it's really not about saying who's right and who's wrong, because whatever. But I feel like my fears were, we were all scared. But it's turned out, it's been a hard year, right?
It's been a hard year, and you can say it. I was trying to be very optimistic last year.
Which is a lovely, lovely quality and super important. But I was very depressed. Well, it's not about being right. I mean, there's still a lot of good in the world. I was actually reflecting back on this because, like, in the past year, like, what has happened? I mean, it's been a terrible year. But there's also been, like, a lot of really good stuff. Like, we talked about, you mentioned the Women's March and the Pussy Hats. Like, that was a really beautiful moment. There's been, like, pushback on certain things. You know, like the transgender ban in the military that's being pushed back against. That was really cool. You know, there's been like these moments. And then we just had an election and like the first trans woman was elected to office.
And she beat.
So awesome.
She beat the person who she beat the dude who wrote the anti-trans bathroom bill.
Yeah, which is like fucking poetic justice. That's I love it so much. But so there have been good things. I mean, there have been really bad things that will have like such a long lasting effect on our country and on our entire planet. But there's also been some positives. So
right. Well, and I think I was worried it was going to be a lot worse than it is. And I think the silver lining is the fact that we have someone that is completely and utterly unqualified in that office. So they don't know what they're doing. And because they don't know what they're doing, things aren't getting done towards their agenda as quickly as maybe someone who's read the Constitution and knows how government works could probably get things done. So I think that is kind of the silver lining.
Like a mic
that, you know, the travel ban hasn't gone through and trans ban in the military hasn't gone through because we have people that don't know how to do their job in office. Right. So it's like, that's the one glimmer of hope that I'm holding on to. And we have Robert Mueller.
Yes.
So things are looking up on that front. Totally. And I think it's only a matter of time before that stuff comes fuller to light, because the light is already cracking through.
Honestly, I got some really upsetting news today.
Oh, dear.
I was really, really, really excited when I woke up this morning and read that Carter Page had confirmed certain key portions of the Steele dossier. And then I was really, really crestfallen when
the P part
was Trump's bodyguard testified that the P part was not true.
Yeah.
I really want the P part to be true.
I really want the P part to be true. And I say that because
that doesn't need to be true for him to still be a scumbag.
Yeah, but I really wanted
to be still a dirty old man.
I wanted it to be true because, honestly, I might be having a harder time than both of you. And I think that that's because I fell from a lot further. I was crying today and yesterday, like real tears. I had to wipe my mascara off at an event I was running.
Oh.
And I was like, does anybody have any mascara I could put on? As I've got like eyeliner. Like I looked really funny because all my eyeliner under my left eye was completely gone. And it was like smudged on the right eye and I couldn't get it all off. And then my mascara was all smudged and it was textbook hot mess. Yeah. And I was, you guys go, because you guys seem to be a lot more positive than I am.
Well, no, I mean, Colleen, actually, like, that was my attempt to bring some positivity to maybe balance out our recording last year when I was like 0% positive. But I mean, I agree. Like the problem is like, all of the Trump Russia stuff, like, I'm very excited for all of this to explode in his face. But then what, you know, because the party in power has been complicit with all of this. His vice president is just as bad as him, but also, you know, a little bit more politically savvy, maybe not so trigger happy on like nuclear war. So that's a plus, but like, you know, just as terrible in terms of human rights and, you know, like xenophobia and scapegoating and sexism and all of that. So it's not, you know, like that's the first step. And then what? Because it's not, you know, we need a cultural shift, and I don't know what it's going to take. Like, I don't know if Trump does get impeached or just not reelected, like, is that enough to change the culture of all of these stupid people? And this is
empowered this whole side. Like, I think that's the one thing that I wasn't really expecting. Who could have predicted that in the year of our Lord, 2017, there would be
Nazis?
Yeah, there would be Nazis marching in the United States of America. Who could have predicted that? Like, not in my wildest dreams could I thought that we would have stood for that in any capacity. And like, that's so infuriating and disgusting. And I think to your point, and I think you're absolutely right, that like, we're stuck with this leadership for 3 more years, regardless of who's driving the ship.
I'm genuinely terrified that we're stuck with it for 8 years.
Well, and it's like, and how far back is that going to set us from the rest of the world? Like, we are watching America sliding further and further away from being a global
power. This is how empires fail and lose power. But well, I mean, and it's not, sorry, go ahead,
Colin. No, you go. Go ahead.
It's not necessarily to be an insufferable know-it-all, because, well, it actually, okay, it is to be an insufferable know-it-all, because I'm sorry, sometimes that's how I am. But I'm not that surprised that Nazis were, this is like exactly what I was fearing, and like listening back to that episode, it's interesting because like I was, telling all the sexist and racist people that they could go fuck themselves, which is like a new, I realize it's like this new thing that I've been doing in the last year. And I realized that that's maybe the genesis. That's when it started. Me like having a list of people that can go fuck themselves. And I think that we talked a lot about like, was it the people that voted for Trump, are they sexist? Are they racist? And I kept insisting that yes, they are. Yes, they are. Like, even if they don't think they are, they are. And I think that, you know, what we saw in the weeks and months after the election that came out was all these statistics of, you know, the kind of people who voted for Trump and like where their values align and are they afraid of, you know, minorities and all of these things. And it's been confirmed that like, yes, it was the sexist and the racist that voted for Trump. So it's not surprising when your electorate is largely made up of a bunch of racists that you would then have white supremacists marching.
So
And to that regard, I think I agreed with you then. And I think that was the one thing listening back that didn't really come across, but like, I did really agree with you on that point, that it's like, even if you don't identify as xenophobic or racist or whatever, to be okay to be on the same team as someone who is, like, you agree with it somewhere in your bones, whether or not you want to call that kettle black, like, that's what it is.
You need to do some self-examination.
Last year I took the stance that there was a significant portion of the country, like, you hear about people in the Midwest, they got ignored by Hillary, and Trump went there. They were wooed over by promises of water getting fixed and jobs coming back and stuff. And then you had the hardworking middle class faction of like Long Island who were tired of having the brunt there, because they're educated blue collar people essentially, and they were tired of having the brunt of the taxes and this and the that fall on them, and they were misled by sources like Fox News and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. And I do still think that back then those things were more important to those people that didn't necessarily, that were voting for their own interests, because to them their own interests were bigger than some of the other interests there. So I want to clearly state that I do still believe a year ago that was the people that those are what voted. Over the last year, it's been hopeful every time poll numbers come out that he loses more and more of those people, because I can't reconcile that. I have no excuses for them to vote for him, but I still see those reasons that you have, you know, you have people who weren't, that cared more about like poison in their water and feeling like they were ignored. So I don't give them passes, but I still think that it wasn't like an automatic, I'm a racist, I'm a supremacist, I'm a sexist. As more and more people turn away from that, that kind of also leads me to believe that those people were fooled and they had their blinders on. And the people that are left now are the people who are what you're talking about.
Right. But what I find troubling is that there's still so many people
that's
still
where I'm going next.
Great job.
I have a really hard time, and it was an op-ed from, I think it was the LA Times, yesterday, Monday the 6th, I think it came out. I think it was the LA Times, and it was The Cult of Trump. And it really kind of said a lot of things that I've been formulating in my head for a while, and it made me feel somewhat hopeless. Is, like I said, I think that the approval ratings that are lower, the people who have fallen away, who voted for him for whatever their own personal reasons were, that now see that this guy is not a good person or president or any of the above, or competent or even mentally stable, or, you know,
going to help with any of the things that they thought he was going to do for them.
Exactly.
Right. He doesn't care about those people at all.
Right. There's people who are now seeing through the tweets. Like, it's the Democrats' fault that I wasn't able to bring your jobs back. The Democrats
look over there. We're
blocking us, you know. But you have a group of people. You have a large. You have people in this country who still think that the media is fake news, that he is somebody who's trying to do what's best for the country, but you know, the Democrats in power and the Republicans even don't like him because he's trying to drain the swamp. So they fear for their jobs. So they're working actively against him, and he can't get change done in this country because the politicians are scared of how good a job he could do and how he would come for them and blah, blah, blah. And then I get angry about the people that I know who still listen to Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and InfoWars and Fox News and everything Fox and Friends and that fucking crazy ass bitch who has just, I don't even know her name, but she's the one that, you know, was like, the black players in the NFL should feel lucky that they're even playing with jobs.
Oh, that, Tommy that Lauren? Lady.
Yeah, whatever her, no, not Tommy Lauren.
She's the worst.
But Tommy Lauren got, she's not even in the inner circle anymore because she was pro birth control, right?
Right. So, all it takes is one step, one toe over the line and you're out.
And you know one something
into the
that,
20th century.
And you know something that is the fact that somebody dared, somebody who was a darling, and she's still, I think, a darling, but didn't she lose her job over that or something? And
I think so.
She did. She
wait,
did.
Wait. She lost her job over being pro birth control?
Not even pro. She like made a tweet that sort of alluded to the fact that she would.
No, she went on a talk show and said that she was pro birth control or whatever it was, pro abortion, pro life. She said she was pro choice.
Those are two very different things,
right? But, and I believe it was on The View. I think it wasn't a tweet. I think it was an interview. It was like with The View.
It was definitely in it. I know because I watched the clip of her saying it.
Right, I did too, and it did just seem like such a flippant comment that it was just sort of like really. Really? This is what you're all going to get all up in arms about?
Right. So not to get too off topic, but even that is an example of why I think there are so many people who refuse to step outside. They want to make sure that they hit every single checklist because they're afraid that somebody might accuse them of being a bad Republican or something like that. And it's insane. And maybe that's not even a thought that's fully formulated because it makes me angry that I know people who...
Yeah.
Who still believe, who will look at like the uranium thing. And that's been fact checked to, my God, high heavens at this point. And
right. And it's just because the lens in which they're receiving the information is such.
She lost. Give it up. You can't, call for her to go to jail every fucking time. Your guy is caught doing something wrong. But
right. And this gets back to the underlying problem of the electorate that elected Trump. There is a huge problem with things like sexism. Why are they calling for her to be locked up gleefully? It's sexism. That's what it is. Why did somebody get fired because they dared to say that a woman might?
Right. Those
have
are
the right
people that are
like that's sexism.
And right, and that's what I'm saying is, I think those are the people that are left standing are the ones who were called deplorable. The ones that have fallen away are the ones who have the wool out from over their eyes. But my other issue, and this is like, because that's personal to me, because it makes me frustrated and whatnot. But the other thing is, I'm not talking about, like, when you're talking about how it's going to set our country back, I'm not even talking about things like, you know, arguing about legislation over whether or not abortion should be legal or not. What is even worse to me are things that will actually set us back. Things like the EPA, you know.
Right, right. And that's more what I meant.
Yeah, that to me is a much bigger deal. And I don't mean it flippantly, like pro-life versus pro-choice isn't a big deal. But like...
But if we don't have a planet to all be alive on, it sort of doesn't matter.
When you're literally denying science or you're putting things in religious... Life begins at conception is a religious belief. And that's fine if you believe that, but that doesn't belong as the mission statement of a government agency, you know, like it is now. So things like that, where we're going to fall behind in scientific research, we're going to fall behind in certain areas because we have people who have no experience in those areas in charge.
Right, I mean, and we don't necessarily have the time to fall behind.
We don't have the time because the world will move on.
Climate change is real. Like, I don't know if you guys watched Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, but I was watching his episode from this past weekend, yesterday, I think. And, like, you know, the main story wasn't about like the EPA or like environmental protection, but it was like sort of adjacent. So like, it would come up and like, he would just throw up this big graphic. They'd be like, climate change is real just because it is. Like, it's like, I can't mm-hmm. keep telling you like it just because it is. Like,
yeah.
All facts point to this is a real thing, and denying it doesn't make it go away. It's real.
Right. But right. Don't forget, and in 2008, John McCain was all on board with talking about climate change. So, and what switched? It was money.
They're all bought out. And money. Like, they're also approaching death. So apparently they don't care. I think that's like one of the fundamental problems that I have. And one of the differences that I see in like a more conservative stance versus a more liberal stance. And of course it's more nuanced than this, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But basically it's like the more conservative stance is I care about myself and my family. Yeah. And the more progressive stance is I care about people because they're all human beings and I care about the planet. It's just like a much more like global outlook. And I think, I mean, the direction that the country has been going for a long time, like there are certain like individualistic values that have become like entrenched in our American culture. And I find that to be more progressive I find that to be more on the conservative side. That's why we don't have universal health care, for example, because I care about myself and I don't, you know, and I did this all myself. And it's a very obtuse sort of, or not like, yeah, like acute sort of like way of understanding the world. And I think that it's naive and limited.
And well, it's this very, very narrow idea that capitalism will save us in all and any iteration and regard.
You know, I was thinking about this today. Where the people who are, I'm not making an argument against capitalism, so please don't think that. But
one could because.
But one could, not, particularly in certain arenas.
one could not, because the system. Yeah,
but we're not going to right now.
Anyway, to your point
is, so a capitalist society is, you know, you can be as successful as you want. So with all of that success, you know, don't punish the rich people. Give them their money because theoretically it will trickle down, even though they're really just spending it on private airplanes and pools for themselves. But okay, because back in the day, because Jay actually had found this interesting article that talked about, I think it was like Mitt Romney's father and the time that he grew up. And I don't remember exactly what it was because this was over the summer at some point. But it spoke about how the rich back in the day are very different than the rich now. There's a much bigger greed component in wealth now versus wealth back then where – and I wish that I remembered more of it. It was several months ago. But it was very interesting. And I was thinking about this and the hardworking middle class people who are still pro Trump because they feel like the Republicans are the persecuted people in the minority and there's a war on Christmas and Christianity and, you know, they're part of the 55% of this country who thinks that white people are like the most prejudiced against group or whatever it is. And they're tired and they're angry with paying more taxes, right? But they don't want to vote in their own interest because why should you take their whole thing? Well, why should you take money away from somebody who worked that hard to get that money? You're not taxing the poor for that money. So why aren't they paying their fair share? We get angry at the people. They get angry at the people below them rather than the people above them. And it's so backwards to me in a way, because I want to just be like, you bitch and complain about how all the taxes fall on you, except the middle class is shrinking. You're still going to be paying all these taxes, and solutions that can easily help fix it, which is to tax the people that more who make more money and don't give them all the exemptions that get them out of paying all their taxes. So of course it's going to fall on you. So why are you getting mad at the people below you who can't afford something? You're not getting mad at the people. So what do you want? Like, it's like, what do you want? And that's neither here nor there. Yeah. And I'll probably take all that out because it made no sense.
No. I actually love that because, like, while you were talking, that really made me think of the cycle of abuse. And, like, this is all, of course, with me, it all comes back to patriarchy. But holy shit, it all comes back to patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
So this makes me think of the cycle of abuse wherein a man, you know, beats his wife because maybe she's physically weaker than him or whatever. The wife then takes it out on somebody who's physically weaker than her, probably the kids, or it might be the husband also, you know, taking it out on the wife and kids. Then the kids take it out, you know, the oldest kid takes it out on somebody who's weaker than him. So maybe it's an older brother taking it out on a little sister. And then the little kid takes it out on, you know, somebody that's weaker than them, like maybe the family animal or something. And this is like,
right,
how this works. It's the same sort of thing. Like, why don't you go after the person above you? It's because when you have this sort of like hierarchy, and this is where you could throw in a little criticism of capitalism, when you have a hierarchy that's created by these structures, then it makes kind of sense in a way that the middle class would then take the lower class to be the person to, you know, to batter and to abuse and to sort of take it out on as like a scapegoat. Because they're being battered and abused by the level above. And so the whole system needs to be reworked. And so I think we can absolutely talk about, like, the patriarchal system is a system in which you have this hierarchy where the man is the head of the household. He is, you know, the most important person. So you're making distinctions in hierarchy already. And that's the whole system that needs to be overthrown, where people need to be treated as equals. But you see that reproduced then in something like capitalism that kind of has like a similar structure.
Right.
It's all fucked.
Right. Yeah, and it's just like, there's too many people that are that benefit too much from the way the system currently is to go in and completely change it.
Well, thank you for explaining that. Cause I was kind of, yeah. I know I got very derailed from the point and I wasn't really, I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of emails about about sounding like a crazy person who wasn't making sense. I'm in a bad place. Like I said, and a lot of it is because I know people who I feel won't even acknowledge that we're dealing with who I feel is a crazy person who believes Sarah Huckabee Sanders when she goes out on a national stage and says things like, that person should get fired for their tweets or, you know, I don't find a problem with that. Who say, well, you know, you have the right to say whatever you want, not the right to not have consequences from it. And it's like, yes, of course, we know that. But the government can't be the people that are calling for you to get fired. That's the whole fucking point.
Right. Well, and like in that same regard, like the government can't just say what they want.
Right.
Like, just because you want it to be true doesn't believe, you know, like, where is the consequence for that?
Or the right. or they believe, like, Trump tweets, NFL is down and it's all because people don't like our military. And then Fox News reports, you know, and that crazy ass fucking bitch goes off. And then they come back to you and they're like, did you know that people that don't stand for the anthem hate the military and the NFL is down and, you know, Trump's going to drain the swamp. He's going to get rid of all those people. He's really fighting the good fight for us poor people, us poor white people who are so discriminated against.
He's not fighting any fight. He is playing golf and tweeting. That is right. Essentially what he's doing.
And then you say to them things like, and how come he's taking more golf trips than Obama? And they respond to you with something like, but he's working from the golf course. So
no, he's not.
He's doing works. And it's just like, there's always an excuse for something, or now they believe that Bob Mueller is pro-Democrat, so they want him to be removed. Or did you know that because the DNC and Hillary funded part of the Steele dossier, it was all made up? So just because Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity said that it was all made up because of who it was paid for, this whole rot means that in the entire Russia thing, Russia had nothing to do with us. The entire Russia thing was completely made up. And then you hear things like that. And
well, like, half that dossier was also funded by conservative Republicans.
Yes.
Can't cherry pick the facts. Research.
Yeah.
Well, when you're only but getting your you news can. From yeah. one source, right. you can cherry
that
pick
do
the
cherry
facts.
Pick, that do and, cherry pick the facts.
And that has me down. And even with the church shooting last week. And then I went onto the comments again on Facebook.
Don't do it.
And I read all about how it's not a gun problem, it's a mental health problem. And, you know, the liberals...
It's not a gun problem. How did that mentally ill person get a gun?
Because the government didn't do their job. The laws are in place. See, the laws work if somebody didn't do their job. So therefore, the liberal snowflakes are just complaining. They want more laws, but the laws that we have don't even work. So why don't we try to... You know, and it's just... It goes... And then I read a thread... They were, you know, made a comment about it's not time to pray, it's time to take action. Yes, now is the exact time to start praying. And, you know, and this person responded, if you break your foot, do you pray that it gets healed or do you go to a doctor to get it healed? And they were like, seriously. Well, that's a great point, but don't discount what the Lord can do.
So maybe, like, if you're really, like, the church-going type, maybe you can do both.
Maybe, like, exactly. How about we look at a world where maybe both things are possible?
Yes.
And in fact, should be possible.
So, and then it becomes, well, they want to take our guns away. And it's like... No, they don't want the NRA to take their money away. Nobody wants to take your gun that you're protecting your house and away from you. They just don't want you to. They don't think that you need to have military grade weapons.
Right. I kind of want to take your guns away, though.
No, personally, I super want to take your guns away, but I recognize that that's not possible, and that you have a right, and you, for whatever reason, are very attached to that right. So, yeah, there is a difference. I personally do not want... I don't see why a civilian needs to have a gun.
Well, so my sister's been trying to get a carry conceal permit for, like, 2 years.
And
she's run into, like, these different problems. So, you know, her whole thing is, well, it's not easy to get a gun. And I'm like, I don't know why it's not easy for you to get a gun. You weigh 100 pounds and you probably couldn't, you know, self-defend yourself regardless. And you have zero criminal record and you've never gotten below an A- in your life. And
actually, she's the type of person that it is easy to get a gun.
Yes.
So.
And she has had the hardest time.
It's the same way. And let me phrase my thought about, like, guns this way to, like, I personally don't believe in guns, but I also recognize the fact that someone else does not agree with that, in the same way that I would respect that, like, if for a religious reason you are against abortion, like, I would hope that you would understand that someone who does not share your religious views could still have access to that abortion if they wanted it.
Which,
like, I feel like I take that same concept when it comes to guns. Like, all I want is just to live in a world where there are enough laws and safety precautions in place where I don't have to feel like anytime I hear a noise, I'm about to be part of a mass shooting,
right,
or any kind of shooting.
Right. And I think that's an interesting comparison, but the big difference for me is that the understanding that somebody else has the right to an abortion, like, that impacts the person who's having the abortion. It doesn't impact the person who has, you know, religious concerns or whatever about abortion. The gun thing, like, that has consequences for everyone around. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not quite comparable in the same way. So, like, I really do think that we need to move to a place where we are having conversation about how stupid and outdated the Second Amendment is, and how, like, we should be able to get rid of antiquated things that don't make sense and are not good for us and that do not serve society. And I think that we should push that, because I think everyone, even progressives, it's so ingrained in us that we have to put this caveat with, like, oh, but I understand that it's your right and I'm not trying to take your guns away and whatever. And usually it's for political reasons, and I get that. But, like, no, right. I think that we actually do need to push that conversation of, this is stupid. And what, you want to bring a gun into your home? Like, what are the actual statistics of that? Like,
well, but, sorry, not to cut you off, but and I don't know if you guys saw this article today, but there was a fascinating article in the New York Times about this very thing. Essentially, they were making the argument that instead of talking about it in terms of gun control or gun legislation, to treat it like a public health issue.
Yes, absolutely.
And look at it in the same, and use the example of how we have made cars safer and the legislation and the rules and the regulations we've put in place with automobiles in the past century have made cars like exponentially safer. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. Like we can link the article in the show notes just because I think it's a great read and everyone, no matter what side of the argument you're on, should read it. But the thing that really stuck out for me is the fact that they were talking about how very few real statistics there are about guns and gun use and gun ownership and like murder. And like, there really just aren't that many statistics because the NRA squashes a lot of it. They had a whole
studying it anymore.
Yeah. They had like a whole stat about grants that get given out to research this kind of stuff. And it sort of broke it down by different illnesses, like how many grants were given out to do research on a cure for cholera or diabetes or whatever. And it's like for guns, for the amount of people that died from guns, it was like 2 grants. And it's like, yeah, if you're not doing the research, like we don't have this information. So yeah, it's like people can bend what little facts and little statistics there are to their will.
Yeah. Before we bring it back to the election stuff.
It's all related.
Because we're running long now, but and we still have some feedback.
But yeah, to bring it back to the actual to bring it back to the podcast, I realized when we started I sort of jumped right in and I didn't actually back up and talk about the episode. I'm glad we decided to do this revisit because I actually had never listened back to the episode. That I had this real mental block and I was just really scared to go back and listen. I think mainly for my own narcissistic reasons, and I was just really afraid that I was gonna sound like a really dumb, silly weenie head. But I couldn't do it. And I don't think if we hadn't decided to do this revisit episode, I don't think I ever would have listened. And that would be a real shame because what a treat it was to listen back to it today. Like I'm going to go out and say, I think that was my favorite episode we've recorded.
Absolutely. Me too.
I thought it was so raw, but I thought we all made our points really well, even though we were really struggling to figure out what those points were, you know. And I was really afraid that because I was kind of struggling to decide like how I felt about it, that like what I thought I was saying was going to come off sounding really, really ill-informed and really just incorrect, and that turned out to really not be the case. So I'm really glad that we decided to make the episode to begin with. Because I think while it was really cathartic for us, I think we also made a lot of really great points. And I think it was just a really interesting discussion. So yeah, I'm really glad that that little time capsule of that week exists.
Me too. There's a couple of episodes of this podcast that stand out as like things I'm particularly proud of. And that's number one. I think, if I may, I think that this episode is going to be another similar experience where... I think we have a lot of good discussion already and a lot of good stuff in store, if I may pat our own backs. But
you may.
I think what made Raw so important and like why we're drawn to it still is that because it was raw and because it was just such an emotional reaction and it's just like an in the moment, like I think that made it so real and there was no editing and like we were all, you know, emotionally on edge, and I think that's what makes for a good episode. So if nothing else, like that's one thing that came out of this horrible election. But.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of our listeners were feeling exactly the same way. So it was a good conversation to be had.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, I was wrong. It got worse than I thought. Children are dying in charges, guys, and nobody cares.
But like, I don't think there was anything wrong with taking that stance and like just wanting Americans to be better than they turned out to be.
Right. But you know, even today, the results of the elections today, somebody on CNN had said this is the first real test for the resistance, and.
Right.
I think that based on at least the Virginia and Jersey election results, which were really the only ones that we saw before we started recording, people came out to vote. I'm still very frustrated. I do think that it's positive that poll numbers, you know, tend to slip, which I think means that the people that voted because they were in their own little bubbles, you know, and not so much in the cult of Donald Trump, you know, woke up and was like, oh, God, no. You know what I mean? So I do think that's positive. I get very upset when I see things like I was talking about, just ways that the country will be set back, that the rest of the world will move on without us, that we, you know, maybe can't afford to lose that. And that upsets me. And again, like the people that I know who refuse to even concede that this guy is at the very least, like, you can cite the economy, you can cite that he's pushing your conservative agenda, but at the very least, like, you can't even admit that he's a fucking sexual assaulter. Like, you can't even, like, you know, that frustrates me. It's like, you know, like, you just automatically believe that every woman that came out against Bill Clinton, they were telling the truth, but every woman that came out against Donald Trump, they were lying. They were paid off by people. And I know that group gets smaller and smaller every day, but that really gets to me. And the shooting in the church, somebody that shouldn't have had a gun, and we still don't want to talk about ways to fix that. Like, children got shot at for crying in church, like, got hunted down. Like, that's terrible. That's just like Sandy Hook. If you can't stop and think there, like, you still want to, oh, wait, what does the president say? Okay, the president says it's mental health. Now, I don't want to have a healthcare system that provides mental health coverage to everybody.
Right.
But it's a mental health thing. So yesterday I was in a bad place. Yesterday I cried a lot during the day. Yesterday I thought that maybe it was hopeless and there was no chance that, you know, anything was going to get better. I'm in a better mood today, but I'm definitely a lot more down than I was a year ago.
Could also be the hormones.
I don't know.
I mean, I think there are a couple of things that I think, like, first of all, Sandy Hook is an interesting example. There have been a lot of people who have said, like, the moment that Sandy Hook happened and that we didn't, as a country, do anything significant to address our gun problem, to even admit that we have a gun problem, like, that's when it was over. Like, when a bunch of kids can get shot up and everyone's just like, let's not talk about gun control now, and can't admit that we have a problem, then yeah, that's where it's like, yeah, we really need some significant changes.
Right. The fact that that wasn't rock bottom.
Right.
That it's gotten worse.
Yeah.
You know, it's like America kind of lost a little bit of its soul. Well, at that point.
I do think, and I don't mean to be like super negative either, but like, I think that what we're seeing right now is like the beginning of the end of the American empire. And like, I'm crossing my fingers. Like, I do believe that we have good people and innovation and the ability to overcome. So, you know, hopefully I'm wrong, but I honestly wouldn't be surprised. Like, empires like ours, like, they don't typically last super long. And we are at the part of the empire that's just really decadent and like really fucked up. And, you know, oh my God. Okay. So we're going to talk about this on the next episode, but I recently finished watching Stranger Things, and I was like, oh my God, it's like the moment Donald Trump was elected to the presidency, it's like we were in the upside down, and we've been upside down ever since. And like, we don't know how to get out, but we can get out, hopefully. The problem is, like, will there still be a planet?
Right.
I think, yeah. Let's get in some feedback real quick before we get into our interview with Jillian and Amy. And then we'll laugh about things. So
we'll laugh about things. We'll find some sunshine somewhere.
We'll go back to laughing at some point. So I had solicited for some feedback in that political overflow group for the Jay and Jack group, for anyone that wants to talk politics. So thank you to all my homies in there. I just said, well, how do you guys feel? I posed the same question as what we were talking about in the episode. Dennis joked, it's only been a year. It seems like 5 or 6. And then Matt wrote, .. centuries. It really does feel like it. Like the Paris Climate Accord came back around today on social media, and I was like, holy shit, that was like May or something. That was that was so many things ago that I had to like step back and be like, okay, what happened with that particular thing? Matt, continue. That was a rough night. I stayed up until 3:30 in the morning, and I'm usually in bed between 12 and 1. I was pretty scared. I still am, but I try to focus on how miserable he is being president, but it doesn't mean that he's the boss of America. Viva la resistance. Dennis says, I'll never forget ABC News reporting the results from the Dade County area in Florida, expecting Hillary to quickly catch up and not seeing that. They were almost speechless, shocked, near to tears. Ryan said, I feel like I've learned so much about the people I thought that I knew. After the election, many Trump voters proudly unveiled their views in completely disappointing ways on race, immigration, poverty, policing, etc. People I've known my whole life were suddenly saying terrible things about the issues of the day. I feel like Trump made people feel safe and proud to say incredibly insensitive things. That's probably way more elegant than I just spent the last 45 fucking minutes trying to cry about. Jamie Joe says, seems like forever and like yesterday. We knew the hell was coming. I'm not surprised, unfortunately. Sherry says, it's still impossible to wrap my head around the fact that we have a president that Kim Jong-un calls crazy. And what's worse, I find myself seeing the North Korean dictator's side. Every time the president opens his mouth or sends out a tweet, I cringe. We didn't even talk about his Twitter.
I don't have the energy.
Yeah. How could someone so unbalanced, so clearly unqualified, have won anyone's vote? But my biggest problem is actually not 45, but the Republican Party, which is completely out of ideas, and rather than distancing themselves from a maniac, is willing to sacrifice its future by not challenging the president.
Looking at you, Paul Ryan.
Yep.
Can I really meant to say this before, so can I just say this real quick?
Say it.
Mm-hmm. When I was talking about the people that, you know, voted for him and not the ones that have, like, you know, had the wool pull away from their eyes, but the actual cult people, is the other thing that had me feeling hopeless with that was the politicians are so terrified of those people that I feel like even if they wanted to, like, rise to challenge Trump, they're too fucking chicken shit to go against that crazy, crazy ass core base.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's also very disheartening because you're elected to lead.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Everybody, not just the people that voted for you.
But the idea of like public service and actually like, you know, serving your country, doing good. Like, I think that's kind of gone out the window with a lot of the more conservative parts.
I know. That was just one of the things that actually was pertinent to what we were supposed to be talking about that I didn't say, so I wanted to say it. Dan says, I think the extremists on both sides are feeding the Trump freak show, and we're mindlessly letting the shitty things he says and does cause us to become more extreme. I said earlier, the far left are just as bad as the far right nuts bringing crooked Hillary into every single conversation, and they are the fuel keeping the fire going, whichever side they're on. They unleash whatever sanctimonious judgment upon those that try to stay moderate, but it's the moderates that are trying to put out the damn fire. Life is too short to be easily manipulated by a narcissist, or let said narcissist poison ruin our relationships with those that aren't exactly the same as us.
To Dan's point, like, the political spectrum, I feel like, is more like a circle. And when you get too far to the left or too far to the right, you find each other. So
that's very good. That's a good point. Also, sometimes, you know, when I see people arguing in the Facebook comments, sometimes I want to tell the people who are arguing on the left, I'm like, just shut the fuck up. You're making it worse. You sound just as crazy.
Yep, there are gradients. And this is coming from somebody who's like super left, but just not, you know.
Shani, there are people that make you look sane.
I am sane.
I'm just kidding. I told you we were going to laugh about things. Holly says, I think Trump has America right where he wants them. Sorry, let me say it again. That came out very like, Holly says, I think Trump has America right where he wants them. He uses the media and social media to work us into a frenzy over his insanity so that we are so busy worrying about his insanity that we don't know what he is really doing behind the scenes. It's distractionary tactics that keep us fighting with each other and picking sides. Divide and conquer is the method used by most dictators like him. I mean, yep. NFL, anybody?
But, like, that's been his MO, like, his entire career. I actually just started listening to Embedded, the NPR podcast. And this season they did a whole thing sort of looking at Trump's and his cohorts, their experience that sort of led them to the White House. And it is fascinating.
Interesting. Okay.
Like, I have binged through, I think they're like six episodes in, and I binged through all of them within the past like 2 weeks, which is a lot for me.
What is it called? I'll link to in the show notes.
Embedded. It's the same, the woman that hosts All Things Considered.
Cool.
And it's just really amazing reporting, and it really, you really do see the pattern. Like, this is like this whole bait and switch that Trump does. He's been doing it his entire career.
Right.
So it's just like, you know, he has shown himself. So like, we shouldn't have been so surprised.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress.
I know. The one thing is, though, I think that there might be a good chance that he also doesn't know what he's doing behind the scenes. He just wants us to be distracted from what he did to get into the power.
Right. I think you're probably correct. Mm-hmm.
Jana, and we're almost done, guys. Jana says, I'm sick, sad, and I don't see any improvement in the near future. The big void has rolled back health supplements, protection for women, minorities, and the environment. He has installed a group of rapacious industrialists to head rapacious industrialists to head cabinet departments intent on disbanding them or running contrary to prior protective policies. Hands up in the air, looking for sunshine, finding none. Mm-hmm. Jessica said, I remember the night that SNL aired Kate McKinnon singing as Hillary.
Oh my God, I saw.
I think that was the night it really sunk in with us both, Colleen, that we were so close to having a woman president and lost. Yeah, that did kind of sink in for me a lot. Okay, so we'll put a pin in this for now. And we're going to hit up one of our other very important discussion topics that we've been talking about lately, and that is sexual assault. So let's get into our interview. All right. Thank you. Now we are going to be talking about something, a continuation of a conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago over the course of a couple of weeks. And that is the very important topic of sexual assault in society today, or I guess that it's being addressed in society today. It's been around for longer than today. But that said, I'm going to let Amanda take it away. Go for it, Amanda.
All right. I am so excited. We have some guests with us today. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, but a couple years ago, I produced a documentary called Trickster with a very good friend of mine, Jillian, who is the director. And she is out with a new documentary project that she is working on that I am so proud of her for. And so we have Jillian and her co-director, Amy, with us today to talk a little bit about it. So welcome, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. So it's we've been kind of talking about, and I think if you're a woman in general, you've been talking, you can't help but talk about sexual assault and everything that's going on in the world today, from Harvey Weinstein to our wonderful commander in chief. So this has been something that we've been talking about for a while. I know, Jill, you and I have been talking about this project of yours pretty much since the election. So for a year now, and now you're kind of, it's coming to fruition and it's starting to become a real thing. I think that's really exciting. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, just some backstory. When I was a freshman in college, I was sexually assaulted by a friend of mine. And when I reported it to the police, they told me not to mix alcohol and beauty and told me that my experience was consensual. So after that, I had to be in class with my rapist 3 times a week and then on campus with him for the remainder of my college career. After that meeting with the police officer, he gave me his business card, which I carried around in my wallet for the past 12 years. So last year, when the Trump tapes were released, journalist Kelly Oxford tweeted, women tweet me your assault stories with the hashtag not okay. And so over the course of a day, all these women took to Twitter tweeting their stories, hundreds of thousands of them, and feeling emboldened by these women, I decided to tweet mine. And I tweeted it at like 11 o'clock at night. And then when I woke up the next morning, my tweet had gone viral. So I was shocked to see my name in on people.com. I was getting contacted by news outlets and documentary filmmakers asking to tell my story. And as a documentary filmmaker myself, I decided the only person who should tell my story is me. And so that's when I decided to go back to my campus, which I had not been to since I was in school there, confront the officer who took my report, and kind of see where that journey led. And this, having decided to embark on this, I had known Amy for a couple of years before, and she's an awesome documentary filmmaker herself. And so she was just kind of the natural co-director, and the two of us started making this project together actually almost exactly a year ago. It's worked out pretty well. We both work full time, but we spend a lot of nights and weekends together and shooting and cutting and
talking
and crowdfunding.
Yeah, it's been a really amazing experience. Jill's come really far in a year, and I mean, we just felt like, you know, no one knew, like, the Me Too and Harvey Weinstein, like, no one knew all this was going to blow up when it did. And as you said in the beginning, like, this has been going on forever, but we're just not really talking about it. And so Jillian and I, like, somehow, like, coincidentally, like, slash probably not, because there's some other, like, cosmic thing happening, but that, like, riding this wave too. And we literally launched our crowdfunding campaign, like, the week that the Weinstein story came out. Mm-hmm. So it was like, holy shit, everyone's talking about this. So we're just really hoping to insert our film in that dialogue, right?
Right. And it's like with something like that, it's almost like it partially feels like a blessing and a curse, mm-hmm. you know, that it's like, it's sad that this is coming up, but like for your own purposes, you're like, well, this is great. This is what we're trying to talk about too. Mm-hmm. But it does add this like extra layer of complication.
Yeah, I mean, I think like I was, when we were talking offline, I'll say again. Yeah, it's interesting. I think like there's so much, it's like this really wonderful thing to see women and men as well have a safe space or feel like they may have a safer space to talk about this publicly or to share it with their friends because their people are more like, I want to use the word woke, but I don't. It's like going to come out. People are more aware and people, and particularly like, it's just a time right now where it feels like even as women, we wouldn't be sharing that randomly. Like we'd be in a very safe space, like talking to each other, very close friends. So there's something really wonderful about the Me Too campaign and all this stuff happening. It's, but there's also like this collective trauma, right? So like we're mining through all of this right now. And I think we're trying to figure out how do we like all of our Twitter feeds and news feeds and Facebook feeds and is like, and I'm just assuming a lot of women, our feeds are full of these stories. And so while it's like empowering, it's also like we have to deal with the trauma of it. And we need to like really take care of ourselves. And this is something Jill and I have been saying a lot, is like this idea of like revolutionary self-care to like do the hard work. So back to my original point being that, yeah, it's complicated because it is the conversation right now. And it's so awesome to be a part of it and to have a bigger space to talk about it. And I also like wonder, are people getting really exhausted from it? You know, like how much more do they want to talk about assault right now? So there's a lot of going on with this, I think, with women in general and men.
I don't know if it's so much exhausted is that it's very overwhelming is some of the comments that I've seen, not in the, I don't want to talk about it anymore, but it's very disheartening mm-hmm. that when your eyes are finally open to a problem, when you see that it's all around, and sometimes that is a lot for people because there's a lot going on. So I don't, that personally, I don't think that it's a question of are you tired of it or not. It's just a take a step back and process that things are not. You grow up one way believing something, and at some point you have this kind of awareness moment of your own where you're like, I guess the best example would be with all the actors that every day it seems like there's somebody new and you're like, Jesus, does it ever stop? And that's kind of like a good analogy for real life where you're, you know, some people sit there and deny it and say, we don't want to be the country that cried sexual assault. But it's like, but if it's happening, like, you want to be the country that's sexually assaulting each, you know? So. Yeah.
Right. And I sort of feel like I want people to be sick of it and sick of talking about it because we should all be sick of it because it should not be happening. And to confront it, like you have to, there, as we've seen, like with, you know, some of the instances where there has to be this like critical mass of like, you know, a billion women coming forward before people are like, oh, maybe this person is a sexual assaulter. So
maybe they're not all lying.
Right. I mean, yeah. It'd be easier if we could just believe women like first and foremost, but
yeah, that would be a lot easier.
Crazy concept, Shandy.
I know. I'm kind of stealing that from Jessica Valenti, but still kind of. yes. But like, I want people to be sick of it. They should be sick of it because if you reached adulthood and somehow like, quote unquote, didn't realize that this was a problem, like, I'm sorry, but just like being a man and not realizing it doesn't excuse it. Cause also a lot of men are sexually assaulted too. So if, you know, if no matter if you're like man, woman or other, and you somehow like get to claim that like, oh, I didn't realize it was a problem, then like maybe there's something wrong with, you know, you have some sort of like crazy privilege goggles going on and like, you need to confront the country. Like it's not okay. So yeah, it's a lot, but it's like you were saying, it's like so much relived trauma that like for the people that are doing the hard work, it's also not fair. And that's one of the things that we've talked about a lot in the last couple episodes is like flipping the script kind of, because it is frustrating. Like, why are all these people, why does it always have to be the victims who have to like rehash everything? But I'm glad that you're doing it.
I have a follow-up question for Jillian. And I think that this is kind of, don't take this the wrong way, but why do you think that police officer insisted to you that it was consensual? Do you think that it was like a I don't want to have to do with the paperwork kind of thing? This chick was drunk kind of thing and she learned her lesson? Like, what do you think that was? Because I think that sometimes when we can examine why somebody would do something so terrible, like what right did he have to tell you that your rape wasn't a rape? Like that's disgusting.
Why? Sure. Well, yeah. I think what this comes down to is we have normalized rape in that anything outside of he drug you into the bushes with a knife, we don't consider rape in this cult, in this society. So I think when you have a police officer that is faced with a situation that is outside of that, that's sort of the assumption. And I know that from my conversation with him, he said that it used to be up to him whether or not a case was going to go any further. And so he was able to say right there, yes, I'm going to report this and we're going to actually see what we can do, at least report it, at least tell someone about it. Or he's just going to right there say, you know what, this isn't going to go any further. And at the time in 2005, that was the authority he had. That has since changed. But I read an article this morning that said they might be rolling that back.
Is that the thing that Betsy DeVoe is going to roll back the title?
Yeah, the Title IX stuff. That's like a whole thing we can definitely speak to. But to Jillian's point, like, this is also, well, like, A, what she's saying is, like, he's like, oh, listen, like, all these other things have changed, right? Like, we have better standards in place and procedures and this and that. And while he means well saying that, like, he still is saying, like, yeah, but at the end of the day, like, consent is really hard to prove. And so, like, so what we're really facing here is, like, a systemic problem. Like, this has always been the problem. Yeah. Like, women and men assault survivors are not believed. This is the way our society has functioned forever. And I mean, that's what it really boils down to, is like the laws don't protect survivors. They're not meant to. And particularly in a university case, they protect universities.
Yeah.
Right.
And Title IX, if you guys want to get into that, but essentially like Title IX was like the only way that women could have protection, because it's about like gender equality in getting education on a college campus. And so even with the gold standard of Title IX,
right, which is now unfair to the person being accused. So,
which is ridiculous.
Right. Which so is has it actually been rolled back, or she's just proposed that?
No, it has been rolled back, which makes it virtually impossible for campuses to hold rapists responsible for their behavior. So it's basically, in her rolling that back, she has made Title IX a campus rapist best friend, because it will reduce the number of rapists who are expelled from 2% to virtually none. So you have to recognize that rapists on college campuses are more likely to be are less likely to be expelled than those who plagiarize. So the confusing part is that on a college campus, the campus itself has the ability to dictate punishment for plagiarizing. Any kind of crime that takes place on campus doesn't extend to what happens outside of campus. The police outside of the college campus cannot therefore go in and reprimand a student for plagiarizing. But under DeVos's rollbacks, what she's saying is that the campus should act as if they are police.
And so like essentially, like if you take this and kind of like condense it, only 2% of rapists on college campuses are expelled.
With Title IX.
With Title IX, right. Okay, with the gold standard of Title IX. And also, and much more importantly, it is never on their permanent record.
No.
It doesn't show up on their transcript. If they switch schools, like this is not on their record. So Betsy DeVos is taking this hardcore myth, right? She's taking two myths, right? The first myth is that, well, Title IX ruins lives. Right? That somehow like these men are like losing their civil rights, which is, that's absolutely
doesn't ruin lives. Right,
because right. Rape does not take away right. Civil rights.
Who cares about the victims, right?
Right.
And then the other myth she's speaking toward is that women false report. Like she's assuming if you say like, oh, this is like encroaching on civil rights for rapists, you're also assuming that women false report.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which has been proven
8% are false reports. That's less than 1 in 10.
Like you have to understand it's the same statistic as those who falsely report robbery.
Okay.
Which is in between 2-8%.
Okay. So really it's a nominal number.
So when you question why students aren't coming right. forward and reporting right away, this is why.
And again, like, so we've going back to like the cop. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is like, if we're living in a culture that where even the gold standard is letting men get away with this, like why are cops on a campus going to believe women?
Right.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, and that's even also if it's like
answer to your question.
Right. But it's like by not letting outside police come in and do their job, like we're not even talking about cops. We're talking about campus security.
They are cops, though.
Technically, they are police officers, but they're campus police, which is different. Yeah. Like,
they're not. There's some different level.
Yeah,
like it's more like a security, right? Yeah. It's like a security guard. Like they're usually like retired cops or something.
No,
it's actually cops.
Is it private police, like mall police, or can be?
No, they are actually police officers, but it would be like Hunter College cops versus New York City.
Right. I think I always just assumed that like they weren't, you know, like they didn't go through the academy or like they were interesting.
So,
okay.
So like the cop that interviewed Jillian, he's part of what's called whatever that university is called, it's that PD, right? It's a police department. Yeah. It's a proper police department because it's a school with thousands of kids, right? Tens of thousands of kids.
Right.
And, like, to be fair, like, the actual, like, city police department doesn't do a great job either.
No.
Well, like, yeah.
Oh, this world, you guys.
So actually, yeah.
Let's focus a little bit on the documentary, too, sure. Because you guys have it's not a Kickstarter, but it's similar. It's Seed and Spark.
Seed and Spark. And actually, the name of the film is Second Assault, which we, yeah, which I don't think we've said yet.
15 minutes in, yes. Yeah.
So yeah, why don't you guys talk about the crowdfunding campaign a little bit, and also where the title came from? Because I'm actually also a little, I love it. I love the title. I'm just curious, mm-hmm, like how that came into being, like where that concept came from.
Okay, well, let's talk about the title. So the title, something that Jillian and I talked about a lot, like we had heard, like I think Jillian Joe had Biden. Read, or Joe Biden said it? Mm-hmm. Okay, apparently Joe Biden said it.
Joe Biden.
Well, like, Joe. Although, well, that's a sidebar. We won't go there. But yay, Joe Biden in 2017. We had talked about like that this is what it's called. When women go through reporting, they often feel like it's a second assault, yeah, because they're not believed. They're told it's consensual. Right. There's victim blaming. Like so many women have gone through this. And I think we had talked about this so much. Like, what's the title? What's the title? And then somehow, like, I was on a hike in Kauai and it came to me. I don't know. So this is no magical story. But Jillian and I really have talked about this phrase a lot. And it's exactly her story. And so, you know, I think that's the thing, like about what makes this film, I think, really special. There's a lot of things, but this is Jillian's personal story and her story is unique, but so many women have experienced this. And unfortunately, we know so many women will relate to this, and not even just on college campuses, right? Second assault, it's everywhere for all women who, right, and this is also not just about women reporting, but it's about women not being believed.
Yeah. So for example,
their family and their friends and their boyfriends and everything.
Yeah. When right after this happened, you know, I had just turned 18. I was essentially a child in the world. The police blamed me. I told my roommate, she said, thank God I wasn't there or it would have happened to me. My suite mates told me not to report it, not to go to the RA. I didn't have any support and I don't feel like any of my friends believed me. My boyfriend at the time thought that I had just slept with somebody else. So, you know, I think being out of state and being away from home for the first time and trying to learn how to navigate the world at a really young age and going through an experience like that and having no support, all of these things add up to a second assault, because it wasn't necessarily the incident itself that was the hard part. It was everything that happened afterwards. So yeah, that's why the title of the film is Second Assault. And that's why it's important, because this is still happening, not just to people on college campuses, but everywhere. And the lack of belief, to me, is the biggest second assault that we have as a society. So what Amy and I are trying to do is really tell people that we believe them. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that this film is a tool for that. So that's why we feel so strongly about it. And we're really excited to be raising money. We're 59% crowdfunded today, but we have to make
it. We have 7 days left.
I know we're a little stressed, but we believe in ourselves.
I mean, the cool thing is like the outpouring of support from our networks and people in their networks has been incredible. Like the first 3 days of our campaign, we got to like 30% or something. It was like something crazy. And it was that week, like everything came out and Me Too was like blowing up and it was like wonderful to be a part of that conversation. And I think that's back to this original sort of conversation that I was saying, like, not that people are exhausted, but there is a lot of trauma, right? And we're trying to protect ourselves. So it's bombarding people with this message, but going like, hey, right now we all feel really fucking helpless. We live in like an endless shitty news cycle. If you want to do something good, donate to this film and be part of this conversation, because this is, you know, female artists, support assault survivors, right? Because like we feel helpless right now, but we can do stuff, and it may seem little, but it's one thing. And this story, like Jill's story, is so important. And we really think it will make so many other survivors feel less alone. And we've already seen it in the comments we've gotten and, you know, in the responses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Makes my heart happy.
Yeah. So we'll post the link to the crowdfunding campaign in the show notes and blast it all over our social medias.
Thank you.
So that people can see it.
Yeah, so it's called Second Assault, seedandspark.com, but you can also get the link through their Facebook page, which is facebook.com/secondassaultdoc, I really hope I don't have to spell it for anybody out there.
All real spelling.
All real spelling. Doc.
Use your words.
Without a K.
If you're confused, type it into spell check and see what happens.
Fixing that one. Yep. Just straight up.
But you can also get it there. And if you follow their page, there's actually a lot of really great stuff that they've been posting, links and whatnot. So I definitely, you know, check it out. I'm going to make a pledge right now, actually.
Woohoo!
Yeah!
Thank you.
I'm going to own this film.
I feel like kind of a tool saying it, but like I did pledge a couple weeks ago, so just like throwing that up.
Yay, thank you. It's not a tool thing to say.
No.
I mean, I'm a little bit of a brown noser, but you know.
We're so grateful.
Well, you know something? I had the better on-air pledge making.
I know.
Whatever. It's not a competition. It's all good.
Amanda pledged.
Yes. Yeah. I think I pledged on the first day, guys. So, like, whatevs.
You win.
Okay. Amanda wins. Okay.
I win. But I did want to say, like, I do love that whole notion of, like, being part of the revolution and like your way to do something. Cause I think when we were talking about Me Too a couple weeks back, I know I had a real hard time with Me Too. And I think, Shandy, you might've been on that boat with Me Too of like the fact that the impetus is always on the victim to always be proving that this thing happened. And you do feel really helpless in the fact of like, why, like, what does this do to move the ball forward? Like, what is the end goal? How does this help? You know, and I think a lot of people do feel kind of helpless in that way is like, how is this helping? How can I help? And I think something like this through your film or like things like that are helping to give someone something concrete to latch onto that is actually helping.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Because I think like my thing also with the Me Too is like, I'm supportive of both sides. Like you post your Me Too or you don't, like, but it was the same thing where it's like, why is it always on those who are traumatized to like have to be re-traumatized and like have all this emotional stress and all of that at the same time, like something like your film, like I feel like can be like this really important cathartic moment for people. And just like you were saying that other people, we find solidarity among ourselves and we can help each other and support each other. And it just kind of blew my mind. Like when you were first talking about your tweet from last year, like I remember that night, like I spent the entire night on Twitter, just like crying and reading everyone's tweets. And like, you know, it's horrible and it was traumatic and it was like, you know, that, oh, that,
but this is what that did, you know,
right,
Me Too, the Me Too is the not okay of last year. The not okay inspired me to go out and make this film.
Totally.
And now Me Too is happening. And hopefully this film will inspire somebody else to say what they need to say.
Do you think that the campaigns like the Me Too are getting us anywhere?
Yeah, I do.
I do too. I think we both feel like, look, it's like I was saying in the beginning, I think like, yes, people, and like to everyone's point, like I agree, like we need to be exhausted on it. Like, yes, we need to keep fucking talking about it. But I think the issue that keeps coming up for people is that because like Shandy said so well, is that people are getting re-traumatized by having to share that. And then other survivors are reading that and become, and it just re-traumatized, and it can be triggering. It can be, I should say that. But on the flip side, like what we're seeing, okay. So, and to that point, this is why I like really stress this to all the ladies out there listening to this, like, take care of yourself, like have boundaries when you're reading this, like set aside time to look at these feeds, like be with your friends, like share how you're feeling and talk to a person, right? Because sometimes we're on our feeds and it's like so fucking isolating and you just like fill with rage and there's all these triggers, right? And so in that way, like we have to take really good care of ourselves. We do. And what's really great about Me Too is that like there's this dialogue that hasn't been there before. And it's so in everybody's faces that men are now like going, I mean, and again, this is hard for us, but we do have to involve men in the conversation. We do, because they're the other part of it, right? Like we are always talking about this like passivity about like this many women were raped. Well, what about the men who raped them? Like we have to, like we have to talk about that. And so men coming out and being like, wow, I can't believe how many women in my life have dealt with this. And like, oh my God, what have I done? Fucked up. And like, it, so it's not perfect, like it's social media, but I feel more than ever like this is now something that feels a little safer to talk about, and there's a little more awareness, right?
Yeah.
What do you think, Jill?
I agree. And honestly, the one thing, I mean, there's a lot that I've gotten out of this film, but the biggest thing I think was just validation, which I didn't have for 12 years. So mm-hmm. going that long and spending that time questioning everything and not knowing, to see all these women's stories coming out is what made me feel like my story was valid. Like I could speak about it and somebody would hear me and believe me, even if it was some stranger on Twitter that liked my tweet or said, thank you for sharing. I believe you. Sometimes that's enough. And that's what we can do right now for each other.
Do you also, cause I actually do believe this, cause I did not come from a background where things like feminism were valid concepts, or you were asking for it if you wore a short skirt. And it took a lot of being in touch with a more worldly view through things like going to school on my own and living on my own and reading other people's stories on social media. So I think that campaigns like that reach women who may not, because I know that, you know, on one hand, we ask ourselves, like Shandy said, like, how could you get to an adult and not realize there's a problem? But you're also a product of, a large product of the environment you grew up in, too, until you become an adult. And I think that things like social media make the world a little smaller and bring more attention to, if you stop and listen and look around. And you are willing, and I think a lot of people are more willing. Like, you have your crowd that are probably hopeless, but you have a lot of people, I think, that are impressionable and in a good way, that they're looking to understand more. So that's kind of where I stand.
I agree, and I think what it is like how it translates. Like, it's exactly like it's like what comes from that social media, right? Like, what, like, how does that translate in your life? If that translates to men being more supportive of the women in their life, or survive, or like, you know, even, or male survivors feeling like they can speak out. Like, it's how does it translate in our life? And I think, like, I agree with you. And look, I think so many people were raised that way. I mean, I think
I was,
right? Like, we were all somewhat sheltered. And look, Jillian and I have talked about this, and we talk about this in the film. For the most part, our parents failed us. Like, that's just a fact, right? Like, there's certain parts of society that are built in, and some parents are more conscious than others, but essentially it's not our parents' fault. But like, there's somewhere in there where like, we're not talking about consent enough. There's no consent-based education. It's a lot of fear education.
Yeah.
And parents don't, and a lot of it is a fear with the parents. They don't want to front load it with their kids. Right. So there's a lot going on with the way people are raised.
Well,
right.
Also, sex is so taboo. Can you imagine if we had campaigns from kindergarten, like just say no, and just it applied to things like how you treat women and men in the sexual, you know, like, can you imagine if that stuff was ingrained in us versus something like, you know, don't drink and drive or don't do drugs? You know what I mean? Like, can you imagine if that stuff was taught earlier?
All right, wonderful. Go ahead. I'll get to it after you.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Side note, I'm hearing an echo. Just
I heard it. Yeah, I was.
Yeah, it's been coming. Yeah, it's been coming and going.
Okay, I've seen articles like that about like how you can teach your children about consent and like at age appropriate levels, and it can be like something so simple as like, you know, like non-sexual touching. Obviously, when they're like five,
right?
If they don't want to hug someone, they don't have to hug someone. You know, there are all these things that we as a society sort of like push on them because of social norms or whatever. But I think, I mean, the overall problem is just patriarchy. And like when you were saying that our parents failed us, like, I think that's really powerful. And I think, yeah, like they were not thinking about these things, but probably, I think all of us, like our generation, for the most part, when we were growing up, or they were not voicing them. And we're all sort of products of this patriarchal society. And I think now we're definitely like, I'm more aware of certain things and thinking about them at a more deeper level than we used to be. But I mean, that's the problem in and of itself. Like, and that's why like the whole patriarchal system has to change, and that will fix everything. Because the sex stuff, like the conservative sex stuff, the sex being a taboo, it's all tied in. I feel
like. Of course. I 100% agree. Patriarchy is the fucking problem. like 100% agree on this side.
Well, we spend a lot of time telling our daughters how not to get raped, totally. But we never teach our sons how not to rape. And right, parents right. talk with their children, with their daughters about, mm-hmm. about that. Don't walk yeah. alone. Don't do this. Yeah. Don't do this. But they don't, yeah. don't talk to their sons about it. And it's because right. they're more afraid that their daughter might be the victim of a rape than that their son is might a rape. Be a rapist.
Right. Rape. Right.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Well, and I think that's also
on you to be the, you know, avoid the situation or whatever, that it's on the woman. It's always on the woman to right. stop it.
I had an argument with somebody over the last year at some point, and it was about, you know, well, they don't have to dress like, you know, if you dress like that, what do you expect? Like you didn't have to dress like that. I'm being very general. Sure. And it was like, why can't you have the right to wear whatever shirt you want and not get raped? Like you should have that.
Well,
sorry,
course.
My echo is throwing me off. Right.
Oh, sorry. You don't hear it.
I don't know. I think I just talk loud. But yeah, sorry. I couldn't think because all I could do is hear myself repeating myself. But it was like how come nobody ever asks, like, well, you know, why don't I have a right to wear whatever I want and not get raped? And that person was like, well, that's just how the world works.
Yeah, we got to change it. Also, I'd like to point out, I was wearing jeans and a t-shirt. I was not wearing a skirt or a dress or yeah. whatever.
And not that any of those.
Not that, no, wardrobe has nothing to do with it. Wardrobe has nothing to do with it. But I do think, you know, we've kind of been talking about it. The idea of the language. Like, if you don't talk about it, you don't have the language. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that, you know, again, that's been kind of a benefit of this. It's like, yeah, we weren't talking about consent a couple years ago because it's like, if you're not talking about it at all, you don't even know what words to mm-hmm. associate with the issue. And I think, and maybe that is a benefit of, you know, Me Too and stuff like this, is the more we talk about it, the more we are able to find the words and, yeah, and start to talk about, like, yeah, why don't we teach our sons how not to rape? And we kind of talked about this before, this idea of, like, switching the terminology, and I'm going to be careful not to use exact numbers this time, because last time
X
I got in trouble.
Y.
X amount of women are raped a year, as opposed to saying X amount of men rape a year.
Yep. Yeah, yeah,
and
violence
yeah.
is something that happens to women.
And yes. and honestly, like, back to what Colleen was saying, like, about victim blaming and what we're wearing, like, ultimately, you guys, like, man, I'm going to get totally massacred for this probably, but
do it.
Like, definitely. Ultimately it comes back to, like, Adam and Eve. Like, Eve was a yeah. bitch, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
like, she fucking ate the apple and, like, all hell broke loose. And, like, so women are, like, temptresses who are, like, not to be trusted. We're, like, virgin or we're whores. We, like, we're not to be believed or trusted. Like, this all comes from the same place, right?
Absolutely.
So, like, I mean, that's the crux of it. Like,
I mean, yeah, the Judeo-Christian tradition is, like, deeply, deeply rooted in patriarchy. So, yes.
Right.
Which, like, is so interesting, though, because, like, Eve's crime is that she wanted knowledge.
Come on, the ultimate crime.
An evil temptress who wanted to learn.
Right.
Malala.
Before we close this out, Amanda, I do have some positive feedback for you about that whole thing that you got in trouble for.
Yeah, my ego could use a boost. Tell me.
Okay, so David Gott had said, I thought the discussion on language regarding sexual assault was very well explained in the initial podcast. I thought it was an excellent point on the power of language and how a discussion on an issue is framed. The whole discussion is one of the reasons I like the broadcast. A different perspective from my own is always interesting.
Oh, shucks. Thanks, man.
There you go. Vindicated.
I love that.
And I would say, like, to that, like, that's wonderful because, again, it's, like, inviting potential allies into the conversation. And we need to – it's like this balance of holding people to a standard but also knowing, like Amanda said, not everybody has the language and, like, because if they haven't been talking about it. So, like, to you, David, who wrote that, like – thank you for like being like, wow, I never thought about it that way, because I think it's really great to have that moment and then accept it and let it sink in and internalize it. That's a profound moment.
You have to bring people in, and yet sometimes you have to have more patience, because especially as you get further and further from the 20 and 30 year old women demographic, and even men, like, you know, it's,
yeah,
I think Shandy and I were involved in a discussion recently in a different Facebook group, and it was on equality in some form. I don't want to get too into it, but somebody said, like, usually when somebody gets kind of butthurt and very defensive of their ideas, it's because they know that there's something wrong with what they're saying and they're trying to work it out on their own. And I've seen that, actually, that evolution of somebody that fights back against something, and then little by little they don't fight as back so much because they're reconciling age-old ways of thinking from the patriarchy. So I always thought that was a great, like, comment on society, that, you know, you fight back a little bit less each time because you're working out what you said that, or what you think that isn't quite right, and you're trying to formulate and reconcile how to change your own thinking.
Right. Right. Some people just have a longer way to go to get there.
And we've all had to do it.
You just have to hold their hand a little tighter, because they have a longer...
But they're trying.
A longer way to go.
But they're trying, yeah. Exactly.
They are trying, and you have to encourage.
Yeah, we all learn too. I mean, we, like, gosh... You know, like, I come from an activist background, like, how many times you get called out with your privilege, like, it's important. These difficult conversations are so important. So important.
Definitely.
Well, thank you guys so much for having this conversation with us.
Oh, thank you. We loved it.
On election night 2017, where I am significantly more sober in many different ways, but...
various different reasons.
Sober, somber, whichever. But no, all joking aside, though, thank you guys so much for coming onto the show. Check them out, Second Assault Doc on Facebook. Please look up how to spell it if you can't. And then sparknc.com.
And what Seed and Spark.
I'm sorry, seedandspark.com.
I'm the dyslexic one. Come on, kiddo. Get there.
Sorry. And I was looking at, I actually have the URL pulled up too. seedandspark.com/fund/second assault #story.
And thank you for pushing us to 60% tonight.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
We're going to get you, hopefully get you to 100%.
Yep.
Yay.
All right.
So go on, support, and do it quickly. Their campaign is almost over.
Yeah, it ends.
Don't miss out.
Next Wednesday?
Yes.
So what is Wednesday? Let's give everybody a hard actual date in case they're listening to this on Monday.
It ends on Thursday, November 16th at 8 a.m.
Pacific time.
So for all intents and purposes, let's say Wednesday, the 15th
at midnight, whatever your time is. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You want to get into that green light before you get down to the last couple hours.
Yeah. When people are sleeping. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
So much. Yeah. I can't wait to see the final product.
We can't wait to share it.
Right. Support the film. Then you get all these great updates about where the film's going to be screening, so you can go see it right away. So another reason.
Thank you, Amanda.
This is not her first time.
This is not my first rodeo.
So, any last thoughts? Are we all hoping that we'll at least be here in another year?
God, I hope so.
I mean, it's like the entire planet came out and was like, what, you guys don't believe that climate change is real? Like, let me show you just how real it is.
No, I think, I believe what it said was, hold my beer.
Hold my beer. No, it's just like, hold on, I'll hold my own beer and still show you.
But anyway.
So, barring any sort of, like, you know, continued catastrophe, like, hopefully we will still be here, either environmental or nuclear. We can do a second year revisited. Hopefully we'll have better news next year.
Cool.
Well, yeah.
I'll be drinking next year. Oh, it's midterm elections next year. We should start planning our live election day party.
Yeah. Live election coverage.
Yes. Yeah. So, I'm for that. Yeah. I'm all for that.
Well, speaking of live shows, we're going to be doing Broadsgiving on November 21st. So make sure you know,
are there for that. Calendar.
We're also going to be doing a live 69 show, probably to finish out the year. So that should be sometime in December. And then we're going to take, we'll figure it out. We'll take some time off for Christmas. We'll figure it all out. But I definitely need a break. I'm not going to lie. I'm tired.
I was looking at my calendar, and if I counted this right, and I may not have, our 69th show.
December
this is
12th,
our,
right?
Yeah, December 12th, which is probably the last night I can record before I leave town. So that's perfect.
Okay. Perfect.
Sweet. Okay, so it looks like probably a live 69 show on December 12th. We'll figure it out as it gets closer. Just, you know, be around. You don't want to miss that one. We're doing that one for the trolls. We'll take a short, we'll take a holiday recess again. We'll come back in January at some point and keep going until I pop a kid out of my vag. and it'll all be great. Yeah, so thanks, guys, for listening. If you have any feedback, you can send it to thebroadcasters3@gmail.com, or you can email, you could email us at 331-276-2373, or call us even.
Nailed it.
Thank you to our patrons. If you'd like to become a patron, you can visit patreon.com/jnjack and check out the different levels there. Voting is underway for the Patron's Choice show for this month. I think we might get up to that West Wing one, Amanda, finally.
Yay!
Well, a special thank you to patrons that contribute at a certain level, and that would be Ed the Creepy Funny Mailman, Molly the Millennial, Tack from Tokyo, and Eckhart Rickner. Thank you guys so very much, as always. It's been a pleasure, ladies, to chat with you again. We'll see you next week. On that note, my name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Viva la resistance.
See you later.